TikTok filed its request after a 3-judge panel last week upheld the law, which requires the China-based parent company ByteDance to divest from TikTok or face a ban. ByteDance has said the app will shut down by January 19th, next month, if the law is not overturned. More than 170 million Americans use TikTok. It is unclear whether the Supreme Court will take up TikTok's appeal, or whether the incoming Trump administration would work to upend the ban. Trump tried to ban TikTok the last time he was president, but has recently come out against the ban. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 48 degrees and foggy. In New York City, 47 degrees and foggy. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon, Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, wherever you are tuned in. You are listening to Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. My name is Daniel Del Pielo, and as always, thank you so much for tuning in to Taking Action and for all of your listenership and support to WPFW. It really does mean a lot to all of us. I am honored this afternoon to be joined by a couple of folks who are fighting a good fight to protect some of our natural resources here in the district. We'll get into deeper into what that means. I am joined by Nathan Harrington. I know him as Nate. I've known him for a couple of years. He's the executive director of the Ward 8 Woods Conservancy. And I'm also joined by Sam Sparks. She's a Rock Creek Golf Course for All volunteer. Welcome to the both of you. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Wonderful. Well, as I mentioned, and Sam, I know we don't have you for the full hour. If either of you or both of you, if you kind of want to lay out the issue, as I understand it, over the COVID period, some deals were made and cut that really, didn't give the community a lot of input or even knowledge of what was happening. With, as I mentioned, some of our very cherished natural resources. Sam, could you give us a little more background on that?
Yeah, sure. So, yes, the project that you're referring to is the National Park Service has entered into a 50-year lease agreement with National Lynx Trust, NLT. They also manage two other courses in the district. Under this 50-year lease, NLT would be making improvements to the current Rock Creek Golf Course, as well as an expansion of the course. The issue here being a number of forest land in Rock Creek Park that would need to be essentially clear-cutted. It would impact over 1,200 trees. Some of them, yes, are non-native trees, but the vast majority of them are native trees, mature trees. And our issue with this, as an environmental coalition of concerned citizens and DC residents, is the emphasis or the priority of a recreational sport like golf, prioritizing that over habitat for sensitive wildlife, for combating climate change. The list goes on, light pollution. So that's really where we come in and where we've been against the current plan as it is today.
Thank you so much for that background, Sam. Nate, anything to add to that?
Yeah, so, you know, I am the founder and director of Ward 8 Woods Conservancy, and I've been on this show before with Daniel and Parisa talking about the environmental justice issues with the maintenance or lack thereof of parkland east of the river. You know, there's a pattern, you know, nationwide and worldwide where lower income communities, marginalized areas tend to have less parkland. And DC doesn't 100% fit that pattern. We have are a little bit exceptional in the fact that we have so much parkland that was set aside east of the river, but the patterns of environmental racism are readily apparent when you look a little bit closer at the way the parks look, the way they are, the type of amenities that exist or don't exist, and the way residents are able to use them or not. And so normally, Rock Creek Park is not somewhere where my organization would get involved because it is the opposite part of the city. And it's a park that gets a lot more resources than the ones that we're working in Ward 8. And I've been known to say in the past that some of the what we see in the parks in Ward 8 would just never happen in Northwest, in Rock Creek Park specifically, because it is so beloved and because there are a lot of more affluent and whiter communities bordering on it. But it turns out I was kind of wrong. I think this fiasco, this boondoggle with the Rock Creek Golf Course speaks to some larger structural issues that are relevant citywide and nationwide, namely just the austerity with the Park Service, the fact that they are grossly underfunded by Congress. They don't have the resources to maintain the parks in a basic way, let alone sort of develop them in accordance with a, you know, vision of what an equitable urban park system should be. There's a big mismatch between the way they are structured as an agency that primarily administers large wilderness areas in rural parts of the country and the needs of an urban park system. And because of that, they are very susceptible to private interests who come in and say, hey, we'll renovate this park for you. We'll pay for it. All you have to do is hand it over to us and essentially privatize it. And we see this happening with that lease that the Park Service gave to National Links Trust over all three of our golf courses. And it was kept more or less a secret. A lot of it with those deals, as you said, were made during the pandemic without a lot of public participation. And by the time we did find out about it, October of last year, it was to a large degree a done deal. So I want to call out Vanessa Bertelli. She's really been at the center of this fight. If it weren't for her, this thing probably would have gone down pretty quietly without a lot of noise. It's been an uphill battle. We knew from the start that we might not be able to save these 1,200 trees. But as I said, it speaks to so many other issues that and ongoing struggles over environmental justice in DC.
Yeah. Just to add quickly to Nathan's many great points is that National Park Service does have a history of not holding their contractors responsible and accountable for practicing environmental laws in whatever construction they're doing. A few notable examples: the Everglades. In the last few years, there was another rehabilitation project. There was not a full assessment done to see the impacts of erosion that ended up really endangering and putting the Florida panther more at risk because of the habitat loss and the actions that contractor took. Similar story in Grand Canyon in 2017. Just another case where the contractor was not held accountable for practicing in an environmentally friendly way.
And one of the ironies of that is that at other times, the Park Service is incredibly strict in what you can do on their land to an absurd degree. For example, there's an area of Fort Stanton off of Marionberry Avenue that was woods, but not anymore. It's deforested. There's just a big gap in the canopy, some invasive bushes. My organization, Ward 8 Woods, along with KC Trees, wanted to plant about 100 trees to reforest that area. We were told by the Park Service, you cannot dig a hole to plant a tree or disturb the soil in any other way without doing an archaeological study first. And they told us that archaeological study was going to cost $25,000 to $50,000. So that tree planting has still not happened. Similarly, we have vast areas in Ward 8 that are forested public land. In theory, anybody can go enjoy it, but in practice, nobody does because there are no signs, no trailheads, no trails, no amenities of any kind. The land is just sitting there being neglected. And Ward 8 Woods has all sorts of proposals for how to make these areas welcoming and inviting. And I've been working on it for 12 years and we haven't made a whole lot of progress. They always say, oh, there has to be a master plan. And oh, we don't have funding for that. And oh, Environmental Policy Act, oh, Invasive Species Act, et cetera, et cetera. And those are used to basically maintain a status quo that's not equitable. But if somebody comes along with a lot of money, like the National Links Trust, or we could also say the downtown bid with Franklin Square Park downtown, the Nationals Youth Baseball Academy, they were able to take over a chunk of Fort DuPont Park. These projects aren't necessarily bad in and of themselves, but they are a form of privatization that and illustrate the point that you can have your way with the Park Service if you bring millions of dollars to the table. And if you are just a regular community organization or a DC resident trying to advocate for your neighborhood park, you don't stand much of a chance. And that's not right.
And it opens the door, right? It opens the door to more, right? It's like, let's see what we can get away with this time. And we'll see what we can get away with next. Not saying directly that this organization we're talking about will do that, but in general, it that's what we see through education, which I know Nate and I work with school closures, with housing, of course, right? With what they're able to get away with. So very concerning in that sense. Sam, I know we only got a couple minutes left with you. Any closing words before you have to jump off?
Yeah. I would just say it's looking, I just recommend people try to look at this, zoom out. And what we're seeing is the use of a natural resource for a recreational activity that really doesn't provide value to enough people. If you think of how much land, so how much space is needed per golfer compared to a sport like soccer or anything, it's acres and acres. So I would say it would be different even if some of this land was being used to build something like housing or even a recreational facility where the community is really a larger size of the community could enjoy it. But just seeing what really is just reckless clear cutting, it's a really sad thing to see. And how many, not just animal lives, human lives are going to be impacted by it long term. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for that great point. It makes me think of the, what is her name, Ricky Lee Jones, that put up a parking lot, right? Like,
right.
Oh, no real reason. So yeah, no, thank you so much for joining us, Sam. We'll make sure to follow up with you, as we move through this process. We've also been joined by Ayana Free. Ayana is a Ward 4 community member that is involved in this fight. Ayana, welcome to the show. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm a Ward 4 resident and I live in Petworth. And, you know, Rock Creek Park, along with the other residents of DC that live in vicinity of the park and within walking distance, you know, it's treasured. It's a member of our community. It is a living, breathing entity that, you know, we have been given the opportunity and the privilege of stewarding. Over time, Rock Creek Park has been around for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And at no point has it ever needed to be lit at night. You know, there's natural habitat there. There are insects, there are animals, there are plant species that have relied upon that space being symbiotic with its human nature, his human neighbors for a long, long time. my personal story with Rock Creek Park is that this year, you know, I had to fight breast cancer, metastasized breast cancer. And as a part of my treatment for, you know, just ensuring that I kept my head in the game was to walk to Rock Creek Park on the days when I could. You know, being able to be in that space, to hear the natural bird song, to see and smell all of the natural smells, it's very humbling in that, you know, as being invited to that space, as being guests in that space, those animals can't come to my address on Jefferson Street and walk up into my home. You know, I'm going to put up all sorts of barriers, right? I'm going to lock my door, right? Or close the window. But they've allowed me to come into their home and come into their space and heal. And my story is not isolated. My story is, you know, one of thousands of stories of those who go to the park as a free resource, not only for the residents of the District of Columbia, but for our as a national treasure, can go to that space and not only get what they may need, but also be aware of the fact that we are in the home and the habitat of many, many, many others. And in a city that has had challenges with stewarding the park, even most recently, the brush fires that have recently occurred in the park, we have to do the due diligence to protect this space and protect the canopy for future generations. And so, you know, thank you for having me on the show today. Again, I'm one of many residents that never received a flyer from National Links Trust, never received a flyer from NPS. Again, to live in within walking distance of the park and not even get a flyer to say, hey, we're about to plan to cut 1,000 trees down in vicinity of your homes, which could immediately and potentially warm up your neighborhood during the summer. I mean, we get notices if somebody wants to put up a fence, but we can't get a notice when an entity wants to cut down 1,000 trees. So, you know, if we talk about equity, if we talk about the National Park Service being the steward of our national treasures, but then giving National Links Trust that is unproven in doing this work a blank check, I have questions. And I think the residents of Petworth, Brightwood, Upper 16th Street, Tacoma, I think we all have deserved the right to not only get those questions answered, but to have the same level of scrutiny that's being given to the Piney Branch stormwater distribution project. I'm sure that cutting down 1,000 trees is going to impact where that water goes. I'm not a clinician in terms of being able to assess the environmental readiness or the environmental sustainability of something like that, but I am a logical person. And if you ask me, cutting down 1,000 trees is definitely going to impact where the water goes when it rains. So, again, I may not have all of the credentials that some of the specialists that have been enlisted by NPS to say that this is a go. I may not have those credentials. At the same time, I have questions when this movement has been obscured from the residents, obscured from the people. I've seen no sorts of materials in Amharic. We have a large community that speaks Amharic, that speaks Tigrinya, that speaks Spanish even. There have been no multilingual forums to discuss the removal of 1,000 trees that all of these communities also use. So I think we can do better. So thank you for having me on the show today.
No, thank you, Ayana, for making the time. And you know, something really, it just made me think, I used to walk my daughter to her early childcare, and we used to walk through a section of Rock Creek Park. And it just makes me think of how many district residents are connected to this park and the memories that we have and the healing that it brought you and the healing that it can bring others, or just the sheer, you know, recreational use of the park to be able to, you know, at least from a distance, not hear the car horns and the sirens and all of that stuff and get back into nature, I think is really important for us to remember in this conversation and what happens when this encroachment begins to happen, you know, into our natural resources. So thank you so much for reminding us of that. And as you mentioned, you were lifting up your Ward 4 neighbors. We've been joined by another Ward 4 neighbor of yours, Sterling Washington, who is a community member that is likely impacted. I'm meeting Sterling here for the first time. Sterling, welcome to the show and talk to us about, you know, why you're involved.
Well, I'm involved because I think the plan as it currently stands just lacked vision. And I think that there were other options that they were planning to upgrade the Rock Creek Golf Course other than chopping down 1,000+ trees. And the plan as it currently stands talks about replacing those trees by doing new plantings. And of course, anyone who knows anything about tree ecology knows that seedlings have a really tough time if the parent trees aren't around. So this idea that they're going to replant X number of trees and treat it like an apples to apples comparison is just false. The other things that when you cut down that many trees, and Ayana referenced this, is that the impact on the community is not only just in higher temperatures, but keep in mind that Rock Creek flows into the Potomac River. So we're also impacting the water quality for the communities in Virginia and Maryland that are downstream of that point. And so I would also just encourage the listeners who are interested in getting involved and helping us fight the National Links Trust and NPS in this misguided effort to go to saverockcreektrees.org and contribute to the GoFundMe campaign that's there.
Thank you, Sterling, for that piece of it. And yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's, you know, what we continue to see in the city is like there's no sector of our lives that are not impacted by some sort of privatization or some big bucks that are coming in to say, wait a sec, we want to get rid of what was here, of what, you know, people enjoy and depend on, so we can either have fun or make more money or both, right? So thank you for lifting that part of it too. I think it's really important that, you know, we keep an eye on this, and as you say, join in the efforts to at least push back, to at least say, wait a second, something is wrong here. This is not right. And we have, you know, we live here, we pay taxes, we breathe the air that these trees are creating, and we should be listened to. Nate, you know, what do you see happening as this moves forward, as somebody, you know, who's been so involved in environmental issues in the city? You know, are we seeing any concern from, you know, the council, any other kind of powers that be, any concern about this and what it could mean?
Yeah, I think concern and energy is building around a few aspects of this. One, just deforestation in general. You know, we KC Trees is planting, I think it's about 10,000 trees a year in recent years, which is great. But as Sterling said, not all of those trees are going to survive. It takes a lot of work to keep them alive, especially as the summer heats and droughts become more extreme. Those that do survive are going to take at least 50, in many cases, more like 100 years to reach the size and of the trees that we're losing. Everyone knows the bigger and the older the tree, the more it cleans the air, the more water it soaks up, the more shade it provides, the more cooling effect it provides, the more habitat it provides. And so you are destroying something that's 100 years or more in the making and trying to justify that with the promise that you're going to plant something that will replace it in 100 years. And that's, you know, long-term planning is important, but it's not good enough for those of us who are here now. Another big, and a lot of that deforestation is happening on private land. You know, in Ward 8, we have all these sort of privately owned forest patches. They belong to these investors who have never paid any attention to it. A lot of them have been nuisance properties. But now that it's gentrifying, they want to sell that property and put up townhouses and condos. And DC has a tree preservation law that's supposed to discourage that. But you know, the fees that they have to pay to cut down the trees are not high enough to really be a deterrent when you have a multi-million dollar development project. And in theory, it's illegal to, in the district, on district owned or private land, to cut a tree with circumference more than 100 inches, a so-called heritage tree. But the loophole in that law is that if the tree is declared hazardous, you can cut it down. Not only can you, but you have to. And by definition, a lot of our oldest and largest trees have some dead limbs or some rot around the base. That doesn't mean they're about to die. That doesn't mean they're about to fall over. But it can be used as a pretext to cut them down to make way for development. And that makes it that much more important that we preserve the trees that we have on our parkland, on our public land. You know, Rock Creek is the largest forested area in the city. And the Park Service and National Links Trust may say, well, we're taking out 1,200 trees, but, you know, there's millions of other trees that are being left alone. That's an example of what we call the shifting baseline syndrome, where, this whole area used to be a forest. We've destroyed 95% of it. Rock Creek is this one part that's been preserved, and now you want to chip away at that. And none of this, what's happening at Rock Creek, would be happening if we had local control over our parks. And so I think there is growing momentum in DC government to try to negotiate with the Park Service to get more, not necessarily turning the land over to DC government completely, but to gain more authority over the management. That is risky because, you know, DC government, like the Park Service, has a history of giving away public land in ways that are not in the public benefit. But I think at least with the Park Service, we really don't stand a chance. Like, it is an unaccountable bureaucracy. We're at the mercy of Congress to fund it, or more likely not fund it. If DC government can get some authority over our parkland, at least we will have a chance to advocate through, you know, council members who are accountable to us, and to get funding through, you know, local channels. So that's something I'm going to be working on.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, as you both have been talking about the removal of the trees, you know, this is a nerd alert. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan, and I often rewatch the movies. And one of the scenes that always really gets me is when the orcs, the monsters in the movie, are just ripping trees out of the ground, you know, to make space to create these, you know, battlegrounds and tools and to light fires. And it just makes me think, like, you know, getting rid of 1,000 trees is going to cause a lot of upheaval. Have you all looked at, like, what will that look like? What impact will that immediate removal of the trees, the work that has to get done, how will that impact the community? Sterling, Nate, I don't know if either of you have any input or thought on that.
One thing about the environmental side of this is that they are, you know, claiming that a lot of the trees are non-native, which is true of some of them. You have ailanthus or tree of heaven. You have some mulberries that are non-native, and that's a problem because they grow really fast and they have a tendency to shade out the native trees. So if your goal were to preserve and enhance the forest, you would remove the invasives in order to open up space for the native species. But that's not what they're doing. They're using the fact that some of the species are non-native as a pretext to destroy the entire thing. Some of the natives are being smothered by invasive vines. They're using that as a pretext to cut down the trees that are being smothered instead of just removing the vines, which is not difficult. I mean, that's a big part of what Ward 8 Woods does. We've removed vines from more than 7,000 trees over the last 6 years. And then just going back to the golf thing, you know, they will try to flip the equity thing around and say, well, this is a public golf course. It caters to people who are not wealthy enough to belong to a private club. We still think that you can renovate it without cutting down that many trees. A lot of, you know, they want to restore the golf course, or they say they're restoring it to the way it was when it was created in the 1920s by a famous golf course designer. But that's not really the case, because they're adding this huge driving range that was never there. And that is a big cause of the deforestation that is slated to be open late into the night with these huge floodlights that are going to As was mentioned earlier, destroy or interrupt what is sort of the last remaining dark space in the district that doesn't have air pollution. So I've heard from golfers who actually like the golf course the way it is because it's very naturalistic. When you're playing it, you almost feel like you're in the woods. But I also think it's very possible to renovate it in a way that would, in fact, the coalition has drawn up alternatives that you can see on that Grot Creek Golf Course for All website that shows how the golf course could be made more playable while preserving the majority of those trees. It's National Links Trust is just, they're taking it too far, and they were allowed to get away with it through the lack of public input.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, I would add too, just immediately the loss of habitat for the animals in the park. And there's also the part of the proposal is some nighttime illumination, which is another thing that is not great for trees. We think about, oh, trees need sunlight, and so therefore the more light, the better. That's not true. You know, as trees establish themselves and thrive and grow, they also need those periods of darkness in order to do that. So those are two major things. And, you know, it's very unclear the specifics of their plan because they haven't been forthcoming about a lot of it. But even the idea of planting Bermuda grass on the golf course is going to be detrimental to neighbors that live nearby, because Bermuda grass, you know, can get on people's shoes and then be spread to other lawns, and it kills a lot of the native grass. It just sort of crowds it out. So again, I'm not 100% sure that they're using Bermuda grass, because of course they've not been as forthcoming with what the entire plan is as possible, but that was, I believe, a consideration at one point as well.
Wow, no, thank you for sharing that. Folks, you are tuned into Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM. We are currently speaking with Nathan Harrington and Sterling Washington. They are both involved in the efforts to raise up the issue of nearly 1,000, if not more, trees being cut to make way for some golf course extensions. And of course, that'll have an impact on many levels, the environment, the community that surrounds it. I think it raises up a lot of concerns. If you have any input, if you'd like to join the conversation, if you have a question or maybe involved in these efforts or be impacted by it and want to share a thought, please give us a call. 202-588-0893 is the number to join the conversation. Once again, 202-588-0893 to join the conversation. So can you talk to, you know, I oftentimes folks will hear these issues and feel like, oh, you know, as I mentioned a little earlier, it's always kind of like the big money interest picking on the little community members. But there's a lot of support, I think, behind these efforts and bringing attention and making sure that something better can come out. Talk to us a little bit about the coalition that's formed and, you know, the support that you all have in the work that you're doing to bring attention to this issue.
Well, Extinction Rebellion has been a big part of this effort that they've chosen to take on. I think one problem is that a lot of the groups that park advocates in DC are organized as friends groups, and that means that they have a specific philanthropic relationship with the Park Service that allows them to raise money and do a lot of things kind of on the inside to improve those parks. But it also means that they are obligated to a large degree to support the Park Service and its management decisions. It's hard for a group like Rock Creek Conservancy to openly criticize the decisions of the Park Service because it would harm that sort of relationship. And so a lot of the organizing around this has been done by groups outside of that and ones in other parts of the city like Ward 8 Woods.
Yeah, that's one of the benefits of private citizens getting involved in the effort. I've been involved since early this year, if not late 2023. And again, I just want to remind people, we are trying to hire legal counsel to combat what is happening. And if you'd like to contribute to that, the link is saverockcreektrees.org.
Yeah, we actually have a lawyer who has, you know, researched some of the issues and identified the violations of the Environmental Policy Act. Essentially, when they when the Park Service leased these golf courses to National Links Trust in 2020, they committed themselves to allowing National Links Trust to sort of renovate in as they saw fit. And in so doing, they made what they're called irretrievable commitments to the trust. So after that, it was kind of a done deal that they would be able to do what they want. If Park Service had tried to veto what was proposed by National Links Trust, it's likely the trust could have sued them and said, well, you said in the lease that we could do X, Y, and Z, and now you're trying to set these restrictions. So we have the basis for a lawsuit and that could lead to an injunction to stop the cutting. We just, you know, the lawyers are not, we don't have lawyers who are able or willing to work for free at this point. So we need donations to push that forward.
And we also need awareness and intervention from citizens in terms of calling their local officials and getting them involved. And we have had the benefit of having some elected officials, like, you know, ANC commissioner, outgoing ANC commissioner Kim Patterson comes to mind as someone who's been very involved in sharing information about this with the community. But I would encourage people to contact their council members. And if you live in Maryland or Virginia, to contact your congressional representatives and senators, because as I said earlier, what impacts DC and what impacts us here in DC with this golf course issue also has a trickle-down effect for Maryland and Virginia and those jurisdictions that pull water from the Potomac for their water facilities.
You know, oftentimes what we see when these sort of amenities or these sort of changes happen in communities, it has the ripple effect of making areas of the city that weren't as desirable as more desirable, right? Like people feel a little more comfortable, whether like if I can get in 18, then I don't mind investing in this area. And it could potentially lead into push out of existing communities. Have you all, you know, discussed that? Has that come up as a potential impact of how, you know, adding these sort of what some people may see as benefits, right? Like, oh, we'll get a bigger golf course in our neighborhood. You know, any thoughts on that and the impacts it could have on that level?
Well, certainly if as a result of this property values increase, that certainly could absolutely have that effect of pushing out long-time residents.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and I do, you know, I think that does happen. I think ultimately the way to prevent that is through better housing policy. I think it would be a mistake to blame, you know, parks or, you know, investments in parks, sort of things that make an area more desirable or increase the quality of life. I don't think this golf course plans does necessarily, at least not for the majority of residents who don't play golf. But you know, in general, I don't think you can let the people making the housing policies off the hook by blaming, you know, maybe you not a golf course, but a dog park or a yoga studio or anything else that may be emblematic to some people of gentrification, but it's not the thing that's actually forcing people out. People are forced out because they can't afford to live. Like the problem is with housing.
That's right.
And I think, you know, that what the result of this is likely to make the area less desirable to live because of the increase in heat and the nighttime lights and the loss of biodiversity in the area. So,
yeah. And of course, they say that the National Links Trust say that their goal is to attract more golfers to pay the, you know, the tee fee and make it economically self-sustaining so that the fees that are paid by the users can be used to pay for the maintenance. And if that's the case, then you know, there's going to be more traffic and impacts on residents that might be seen as undesirable. And related to housing, I think Sam touched on it earlier, the fact that there are situations where you may have to there may be trade-offs between green space and the need to develop more housing. But this is kind of a stark example of where we're losing trees for something totally unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Golf in and of itself is a luxury, not a necessity. And even if people do want to play golf, as I said, we can do it. There are clear alternatives for how you could do that without destroying this many trees.
I think everyone talked a little bit about this, but I wonder if we could just get a little deeper into, or if either of you have any deeper knowledge about, but the impact that it will have on the wildlife, right? Like many wildlife animals depend on the trees and just that environment there. For their homes, for, you know, their all of it, right? Or how they feed. Anything to add on that and that impact it will have on you know, district animals?
Well, I think certainly the biodiversity in the area will be impacted. You know, I'm a lover of cicadas. And, you know, the golf course being on the edge of and including a lot of the forest, those are like ideal habitats for cicadas. That's what the mother cicadas look for before laying their eggs. Older established trees that are especially on the edge of the forest, because there is some feeling of safety and, oh, this tree is going to be here for the next 17 or 18 years at least, so I'll lay my eggs here. And then you've got, so, you know, this is going to cause the mass death of tens of thousands of cicadas, but we also are talking about species like owls and lots of other birds. There's a thriving bird watching community here in the District of Columbia, and, you know, you're taking away a lot of the area where they often go to bird watch.
Yeah, the Park Service actually sent out an email update this morning. It says NPS consulted with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to avoid harm to sensitive species, and there's four that they list: northern long-eared bat, which is federally endangered; hay spring amphipod, which is federally endangered. That's a little aquatic critter that is actually found only in Rock Creek and its tributaries. And then tricolored bat, which is proposed for the endangered species list, and monarch butterfly, which is a candidate for the invasive species list. And they go on to say that there's the Fish and Wildlife Service found no evidence of harm to those habitats. Obviously we're very skeptical of that, because the real decisions were really made a long time ago before these reviews. And if the reviews had come down in the opposite direction, it would have potentially scuttled this whole deal with National Links Trust and led to legal problems. Nobody really thinks that the Park Service would allow that to happen. I will say we're kind of at a discouraging moment. They have begun cutting down the trees. They've claimed that everything that they've removed so far is invasive, but I have myself seen that they have removed some native tulip trees. The bigger picture is that there are two more golf courses, Langston and East Potomac Park, that are going to be that are federal, but National Park Service land, but now under control of National Links Trust. And in the coming years, they're going to be looking to renovate those, and we need to put Park Service and NLT on notice that they're not going to get away with doing at those golf courses what they're doing here. Because of the pandemic and because it was the first one, they were able to kind of sneak it in there before we could mount an effective opposition. But it's going to be a really different story with Langston and East Potomac.
You know, yesterday we started a conversation around the rewrite of DC's comprehensive plan, and I wonder if that could be a way. Nate, I know you've been looking into some of the ways to, you know, create more protections for nature in the district. Do you think the comprehensive plan could be a good way? I'm just trying to think of ways that communities can prepare, and get something, that.
Yeah, I think it could.
Meaning.
You know, as I said, the fact that most of our parkland is controlled by the feds is, you know, a home rule issue. It's a legacy of DC being a federal enclave. It's kind of a historical mistake. You know, all of before home rule, all of our park was federal. And when we got home rule in the early 70s, Congress transferred some land, about basically everything that's in the DC Parks and Rec inventory today. Was transferred by Congress in the 70s, but everything else the feds held on to, and they just haven't managed it very well. So we need more local democratic control. But within DC government, we also really need to fix the way we manage DC parkland. So there's a proposal in the council from Janice Lewis George to create an Office of Natural Areas Conservation within Department of the Environment. That office would basically manage all of the forested areas that belong to the district. They would have a mandate to deal with invasive species issues, trash issues, and developing the recreational potential. Because as it stands now, some of that land, like there's more than 100 acres of woods along Suitland Parkway, that belongs to DC Department of Transportation. They're a transit agency. They don't know anything about how to manage woods. They've said that they won't allow any foot trails on their land. So you are, eliminating the potential for recreational access, which is not equitable. So we think that could be a huge improvement. Even DC Parks and Rec, you know, they do a good job running rec centers and the programs in those centers. But when you have woods, you know, attached to within the same property, they don't pay a whole lot of attention to it. So we're really hoping to get that legislation passed next year. DC also needs a standardized procedure and a funding stream for the acquisition of new parkland. Because as I said earlier, we have all these privately owned lots where the trees are being cut down and residential development is going in. The developers always say that it's affordable. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, who knows. But some of these are really special places, like near the Anacostia Metro Station, there's a beautiful wooded hilltop. There's really no other green space within the immediate vicinity. That would be a prime candidate to just create a new park. But everyone I've talked to in DC government really doesn't know how you would even accomplish that. It's not something that DC government ever does. They're always moving in the other direction of wanting to offload public land to developers. The idea of trying to prevent development and create a new park is almost like a foreign concept. And that we need to change that because, you know, that the DPR ready to play plan calls for every resident to be within, you know, a certain, you know, easy striking distance of a green space. In order to accomplish that, you're going to have to create new parks and you're going to have to buy them from private owners. And that's also a way of preserving tree canopy and preventing deforestation.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you both, you know, for the work that you're doing and for the information you've shared with the WPFW audience today. Hopefully folks can, follow up with you both or the organizations you're working with to see how they can help. You know, it just makes me really think, you know, I used to live right by Malcolm X Park. And although that's, you know, it's right in the middle there, and you can argue there's cars parked around there, it was such a bastion, you know, finding a little corner under a tree where me and my girls, my daughters, could sit and just talk and enjoy some time was just so amazing. And imagine, you know, Rock Creek Park, once again, you know, it's just such a value, a resource for district residents. On so many levels, you know, Ayanna spoke to that a little earlier, just really makes you think, you know, once again, we need to do something, something needs to be done, because these are, you know, the opening of the door type actions, right, to see what is possible and what can be done. So really thankful for both of you for joining us this afternoon and sharing your knowledge and wisdom to our audience. As we close out, anything else you want to let the audience know and how they can get involved if this conversation has resonated with anyone?
Yes, please visit Rock Creek Golf Course for All. We need donations. We have lawn signs that are being distributed to anybody that wants them, especially if you live near Rock Creek Park. Also, ward8woods.org. We're launching our end of year fundraising appeal, and we always need volunteers to remediate trash, pollution, and invasive species here east of the river. We're going to be advocating for a number of things in 2025 to try to reduce trash pollution at the source, bottle redemption. You may hear about the return, the 3R for DC campaign. We're pushing for a bottle redemption program because that's proven to increase recycling rates and reduce littering of drink containers. We are removing a ton of illegally dumped tires from the woods. So we're working on trying to create a structural solution for that, to where the tire industry would pay for the disposal and eliminate the financial incentive for people to dump these tires illegally.
Wow. Sterling, any last words for folks here, how they can get involved and in general?
Absolutely. SaveRockCreekTrees.org not only gives you an opportunity to financially contribute to this effort, but there is information there on how you can get involved and how to get yard signs and so forth. So
awesome. And a big shout out to Vanessa. Thank you for helping put this yes. show together, helping to connect us all, and just in general, the work she's been doing to raise up the issue. It's really important, and glad we were able to have you all on the show. Thanks to Ayana and Sam, who joined us a little earlier, who shared their experience and wisdom as well. And hopefully we can have you all back on in the near future with hopefully some better news around what's happening, and hopefully some gains that you all have been able to make. Once again, really important issue for a city that is constantly just losing space, right? We can't lose green space. It's just so important.
Yeah.
So thank you both so much once again for joining us.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
All righty. Take care, and we will talk soon.
Thanks.
Well, folks, as you heard, there's a lot going on in the city as always, closing out the year. Really thanking folks for tuning in to Taking Action and supporting this programming. Thanking you for tuning into WPFW and supporting this wonderful station. We will be back next Tuesday with you, and then we'll see you in the new year. So as always, thank you so much for your listenership and your support. Stay tuned. You've got the news coming up in just a couple of minutes. And then right after that, you've got Capitalism, Race, and Democracy, Pacifica's national show. So make sure to stay tuned for that. We want to thank our engineer for today. Thank you so much for always holding us down. And we will catch you next Tuesday, everyone. Thank you so much. Stay tuned for the news. And Capitalism, Race, and Democracy right after. Peace, everyone. We'll see you, catch you, hear you next Tuesday.
Monday, December 16th at 9 a.m., Uhuru Movement founder, Chairman Amalia Shetela, known to some as Joseph Waller, along with two leaders of the movement's White Solidarity and Reparations component, Penny Hess and Jesse Neville, will walk into the federal courthouse in Tampa to be sentenced for the crime of speaking out for reparations justice, and peace. In September, they were found not guilty of acting as Russian agents, but guilty of conspiring to act as Russian agents. Called a baseless and contradictory ruling, they are appealing the conviction. The Black community and all who believe in justice are invited to attend the hearing in Tampa on December 16th and support the call for not one day in prison. More info at handsoffuhuru.org.
Greetings. If you're already a cherished member of the WPFW Jazz and Justice Circle and your contributions this year have not reached $1,000, your membership will expire on New Year's Eve. To renew your membership or become a new member of the Jazz and Justice Circle through the end of 25, donations can be made during our year-end fund drive from December 15th through the 21st. Anytime before December 31st, Jazz and Justice Circle donations can be made several ways. By calling 202-588-9739 during the pledge drive. By visiting WPFWFM.org and clicking on the big red Donate Now button. Via Cash App at $WPFWFM or via text by simply texting WPFWFM to 80181 and following the clear and easy prompts.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. An extradition hearing began at 1:30 this afternoon for Luigi Mangione, the suspect in the killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. Mangione has been charged with murder in New York and is facing four other charges, including one count of forging a document and criminally possessing a firearm. Since his arrest, authorities have learned more about his background. He's from a wealthy family in the Baltimore, Maryland area. He graduated from a prestigious all-boys high school as valedictorian in 2016 and became an Ivy League college graduate in 2020. Mangione's family released a statement saying they are, quote, shocked and devastated by his arrest, and they offer their prayers to the family of Brian Thompson. R.J. Martin, who was Mangione's former roommate, expressed disbelief at his arrest as well, saying that he, quote, never once talked about guns, never once talked about violence. Martin did mention a chronic back issue that Mangione had, for which he had surgery on, that left him with screws in his body. Authorities have learned, too, that Mangione wrote a somewhat positive review about the manifesto of the Unabomber, a domestic terrorist and mathematician known for sending deadly bombs through the mail. Nikki Giovanni, the legendary and award-winning poet, author, and activist whose career spanned nearly 60 years, has died. She passed away yesterday due to complications from lung cancer at 81 years old. Known for her work on civil rights and social issues, especially gender equality and race, Giovanni published dozens of volumes of poetry, essays, and anthologies, and more than 10 children's books. She was a leader in the Black Power and Black Arts movements in the late 1960s, and her work was recognized with numerous accolades, including 7 NAACP Image Awards, a National Book Award nomination, and the Langston Hughes Medal. On her website, Giovanni reflected on her career in writing by saying, and I quote, "My dream was not to publish or even to be a writer. My dream was to discover something no one else had thought of. I guess that's why I'm a poet. We put things together in ways no one else does," end quote. She was a distinguished professor at Virginia Tech University until her retirement in September 2022. Nikki Giovanni's latest book of poetry titled The Last Book will be published in the fall of 2025. TikTok is one of the most popular social media apps with over 1 billion active users monthly. However, the app has been in hot water lately and has asked a federal appeals court to pause enforcement of a law banning the app until the Supreme Court reviews the case. TikTok filed its request after a 3-judge panel last week upheld the law, which requires the China-based parent company ByteDance to divest from TikTok or face a ban. ByteDance has said the app will shut down by January 19th if the law is not overturned. It is unclear whether the Supreme Court will take up TikTok's appeal
or whether the incoming Trump administration would work to overturn the ban. To the D.C. area, Rashern Baker served as executive of Prince George's County, Maryland, from 2010 to 2018. Now that Angela Alsobrooks has vacated that role to become a member of the United States Senate, Baker has expressed interest in reclaiming that role. Baker, who now calls Fort Washington